95% of all higher education institutions in the UK are member of the National Union of Students, but not St Andrews. From 6pm yesterday through to 6pm tomorrow, St Andrews decides whether it will join the NUS. On Alexander Jones Live today, the official Star News NUS debate. We will examine the arguments with a representative from both campaigns. Also on this edition, the NUS lowdown from President Freddie Ford, and a chance to hear my interview with George Galloway, who visited St Andrews earlier this week. So we begin by debating whether St Andrews should join the NUS. Representing the No campaign here is Lucas Crowe. Welcome to the programme. And we will have a representative here from the Yes campaign as well as soon as Holly Patrick arrives, but we're still waiting for her. So for now, we're going to start with Lucas. And really, you're strongly in favour of staying independent. What has St Andrews got to lose from being part of the NUS?
Okay, so first of all, I would say that a very, very big thing is cost. I mean, it's not a question of can we afford it or not. It's a question of is it value for money, right? So me and my fellow campaign spokesperson, we have looked for the union finances quite a bit. And the thing is that the union in general has a big turnover, but the union has fixed things to pay, right? The union has stuff to pay like salaries, costs for the building and the like. And essentially we've realized that but the thing is that Star Radio is actually itself very much paid for by this budget. And this budget is very much one that we feel would be threatened. In fact, £20,000 is the NUS affiliation fee. The budget is £90,000, right? I feel that St Andrews has been doing very, very well by itself. We've been independent for more or less the past 35 years or more. And we've done many great things. We've done many amazing things. We have amazingly good representation. We have great student democracy. We have the highest election turnouts in the country. In general, St Andrews is doing great. And essentially, we feel that essentially paying a fee to the National Union of Students would not really be that useful. I mean, what do we would get out of the National Union of Students? First of all, we would get the privilege, I could say, of sending three representatives. Three representatives out of 1,200. To the National Union of Students Convention. So already our representation is very low, and this is sort of the main privilege that the £20,000 would be buying us, right? The other privilege that we'd possibly get for this £20,000, I'm not that much of an optimist, the other privilege that we would get would be stuff like training for union staff. Except that the problem is that if you compare us to other NUS universities, we tend to have much, much better student turnouts in elections, so we have much better student democracy. We have much better communications with our sabbaticals. In general, we're doing great, guys. And taking away £20,000 from our union and putting it into an organisation that's very bureaucratic, that's very factionalised, that doesn't truly represent students, it's not a good idea, guys. Like, we think that the best way to spend money is on internal union services, on things that affect every student, like you and me, like societies, subcommittees, and events. And those are some of the main reasons that I wish to essentially oppose NUS for.
Lucas, could I quickly just get you to move over to the mic next to you? I'm not convinced whether it's my headphones that are at fault or if it's your microphone. But if you move there, then I think we can guarantee that everyone will hear you better.
See, sorry, is this better?
That's a lot better. It's loud and clear, certainly for me. So if we pick up a few of those points that you've made, so £20,000 a year, you said it's not a lot yourself. If it's not a lot, then the union can afford it.
It's a bit more confusing than that. I mean, I didn't say it's not a lot. What I was saying is that it's a lot in the case of the current union budget and in the case of the union budget that we could actually be taking stuff away from, right? The problem is that the union in itself has a bit of a complex financial structure. We've been looking at budget statements, and the most likely area for this money to go away is the £90,000 budget for student activities, student experiences, and subcommittees.
But so, most likely doesn't guarantee it, so it could come out of another area. Do you accept that?
In theory, yes. I cannot imagine a feasible situation under which it would go away for another area. I mean, the union has very, very specific running costs. The union will be running at a deficit due to the redevelopment soon. And essentially, when it comes to cost cutting, it's extremely difficult to cut costs in almost any other way than throughout this budget.
But you would accept £20,000? Is that good value, do you think, for what the NUS does?
No, I would say it's definitely not good value. We, as I said before, we are sending 3 representatives to a conference, a national conference of 1,200 representatives. We are getting training for stuff our sabbaticals are already extremely good at. We are, I think, doing very, very well by ourselves. And I think that when it, on a purely value for money perspective, and I could go into the main downsides of the NUS as well, but I feel that on a purely value for money perspective, we would be much, much better off investing this directly into the local student experience at St. Andrews, into societies, into wonderful things like Star Radio. Please, guys, smile, smile.
Smiling wonderful. Doesn't work well on radio.
But it builds my confidence. Wonderful stuff like Star Radio, events, subcommittees, and I feel that essentially the union and the average student would benefit much, much more if we actually took those funds and invested them into something that directly affects them, rather than a faraway bureaucratic organization that has achieved quite little and is distant to the students it claims to represent.
And would you accept that there's nothing the union here can improve on? Because if you're saying that we don't need the NUS, then surely our sabbaticals, they're the best in the country, there's nothing they could learn from other people, we have the best practice here, so there's no need for the NUS. Is that what you're saying?
Okay, what I'm saying is that our sabbaticals are great. Our sabbaticals are definitely better than the average standard we have in the NUS. I am definitely saying that we've got very, very good engagement between sabbaticals and students. We have very good engagement between the union and the students. And what I'm essentially arguing is that whatever effort, whatever time, whatever money we would spend towards interacting with the NUS would be much, much better spent actually improving things here internally and ourselves. It would be much better for our sabbaticals who are, okay, our sabbaticals are already brilliant. They can improve, but I don't think that this improvement will go from a faraway organization giving them training that they no longer, they don't particularly require and stuff like student democracy. What I'm saying is that our sabbaticals would benefit much more from actually getting to focus their attention on St. Andrews rather than on a distant faraway organization.
Another point that the NUS claim that would be a benefit of membership is the NUS card. Plenty of discounts for students. I was speaking to one person today who told me that being a member of the NUS would get them 50% off Spotify premium membership, which they said would give them a £2.50 saving a month, which would more than counter any membership costs.
Okay, the thing is with the NUS extra discount card that it's actually pretty bad value if you look at it in a very holistic way, right? If you look at it in a very holistic way, first of all, shopkeepers, especially local shopkeepers in St. Andrews, have a massive, massive incentive to, essentially, they have a massive incentive to take our discount cards because it would be very, very strange economic practices to take one student discount card over another because they don't actually benefit from taking one student discount card over another, right? I think we can see this in the numbers. Less than 5% of Scottish students and less than 7% of students nationally, and this is from the numbers that the student union has given us in the fact sheet at the start of the referendum, less than 5% of Scottish students actually buy the NUS discount card. Do I think it's a particularly good deal? No, I don't think so. I think that
is that not just down to having poor student unions? They're not promoting it. We in St. Andrews have the highest degree of student democracy probably of any country, any university in the country ever, over 50% last year. So do you not think that our union would have the capability to promote it beyond 5%?
No, not particularly, because I think that if you require a union to promote a discount card, something is very, very, very wrong. I mean, the thing is, it's a discount card.
So our union is so good that it's not capable of promoting a discount card?
No. Okay, so what I'm essentially saying is that, look, a discount card is something that people take up if it's good value, right? If you are given a good value offering, you don't need your union pushing it on you. I think that the fact that the NUS discount card has had poor sales all over Scotland and poor sales all over Britain in general shows that it's just poor value in general. Students love saving money. They don't need students unions to push this upon them. And I think that this very much reflects the fact. So I don't think that it's very much something that our union would have to be massively activist about. I think just a market failure.
Yeah, and as far as you can see, the NUS would take away some of the freedoms of St. Andrews. I'm right in thinking that. What would we lose by being part of the NUS in terms of campaigning, by being part of a national campaign? How would that make St. Andrews' ability to campaign less?
Okay, so the NUS has something called a no-platform policy, which has been extremely harmful for massive lengths of time, okay? Essentially, what it means is that the NUS officially condemns sharing a platform with anyone who doesn't espouse full democratic principles, which officially was created to essentially oppose fascists, right? It would be rather useful if presidents of the NUS could actually define what a fascist is when asked, okay? Furthermore, the problem is that this policy has stretched on far too much and it has harmed far too many people in far too many areas, okay? Leeds University, for example, very recently published a newspaper article with Nick Griffin, right? In this article, Nick Griffin was interviewed by a member of the LGBT community at Leeds, and this article made him look completely ridiculous. It made him appear to have completely reprehensible views, and he might have even mentioned the words Islamic Republic of Britain a couple of times, if I remember correctly. Don't quote me on that, right? Essentially, even though this was an independent article, and essentially, the NUS got onto it very, very quickly and started condemning it, okay? Later on, the NUS said, yeah, but it was only a rogue official, okay? The problem is that when it comes to such rogue officials, and I'm doing this in quotation marks, you guys can't hear it over the radio, so just imagine me doing the quotation mark sign, right? If we are talking of such rogue officials, in the past 10 years, we've had 4 cases like this where the NUS has overstepped itself. In each one of those cases, the NUS sort of mildly retracts, apologizes, promises this will never happen again, and 2.5 years later, guess what? It happens again. It's been a problem throughout the past decade, or even longer, that the NUS has had such meddling in internal student affairs, very often by rogue NUS officials who completely overstretch the prerogative, and the fact that this is happening at all, the fact that this isn't even in line with official NUS policies, but this is happening at all, and NUS officials feel like they can do this, this very much says a lot, first of all, about what the NUS thinks about union independence, and secondly, about whether or not the NUS is a well-managed organization in the first place.
And so one of the disadvantages you're seeing of being part of the NUS is that they will discourage having speakers such as fascists. St. Andrews has recently been branded by a particular IR lecturer as being elite and sexist, and that image of St. Andrews as being outdated and in those particular categories. Do you think it would be helped by opposing the NUS on the basis that we want to hear fascists?
No. Okay, so the problem with the no platform policy is that when I was talking about that Leeds article, right? This Leeds article, it didn't give Nick Griffin any credence. If anything, quoting my very good friend, it gave Nick Griffin a rope to hang himself on. Likewise, inviting members of the BNP to debates in multiculturalism, it always inevitably leads the BNP to be incredibly, incredibly discredited, and always leads to the BNP being inevitably losing support for its policies and students having the policies on transnationalism, tolerance, peace, love, and other nice fluffy things. All of those things are constantly strengthened, right? So I would say that that sort of ignoring such things isn't particularly good, right? Furthermore, when you're talking about the sort of elitist and sexist and those accusations, right? First of all, would I particularly agree with those accusations? No, I wouldn't. And even if there's such a stigma, I don't see how joining the National Union of Students would magically absolve us of any stigmas that we have. It's unrealistic, and even pro-NUS supporters would probably not argue that. I mean, the National Union of Students serve for representation and serves as forum. A very ineffective one, I may add, but I don't see in what way it would change our image whatsoever.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Alexander Jones live on Star.
Tune in to Star, University of St. Andrews radio station.
Ladies and gentlemen,
St. Andrews is the only radio station.
Be honest, I don't know what the fuck you're about to witness. Tell me something. You know, man, it's me, bitch. This is, start it off. Build a kid.
Contact us here at the studio by Buzzing Studio from
www.standrewsradio.com. I'm just out here for my team, ho.
Welcome back to Alexander Jones Live on Star till 6. And I'm afraid that Holly Patrick, representing the Yes campaign, has still not showed up in the Star studio, so joining me is Lucas Kroll, representing the No campaign. We're discussing the NUS referendum in St. Andrews. It started yesterday at 6 and it goes through till 6 tomorrow. And Lucas, thank you for joining us on the programme again. And so far we've discussed the financial elements to this. We've discussed the elements from the NUS discount card and the freedoms that it would give us as a university. And so maybe if we go on to discuss the representation and the help it would give our representatives. The NUS has a number of staff who can help train people. They can provide the support that we need. But is that something that you wouldn't recognise as an advantage?
Okay, so there are sort of several questions in it, right? The first one is, would I recognise it as an advantage? The second one, is it truly value for money? And third of all, is this actually efficacious or does it actually bring effects, okay? So first of all, about the advantage bit. I think that we are already very, very good at representation. For example, Min Campbell, our Chancellor, is already a very, very valued MP. He's the former head of the Liberal Democrats Party, and he's one of the people who have steadfastly voted against tuition fees, right? Our sabbaticals have very often been rather politically active, very, very much so in many different cases. They've been extremely politically active. They've represented the university very well, continuously, I think. And I think that we've already very much got representation sorted out, right? Yes, of course, the NUS could give us small details or something like this. But the real question is, as I said before, value for money, right? Essentially, we're already very, very good at something, and I believe that any NUS input would, it might have an effect. It would probably always have an effect. But this effect would probably be more marginal than anything. It would be much better to essentially keep the 20,000 joining fee to ourselves and actually redevelop our union that way. Our union's good. Our union's effective. And this would only develop it in a very nice and good way. It would continue being very good, right? The final sort of question is the NUS actually effective in national representation, right? I would say that it isn't always. I would say that sort of the NUS as a political brand has been in many, many, many difficulties. One of those is that it's constantly being factionalized. Essentially, as we have very interestingly mentioned on Question Time a couple of days ago, what the NUS has more or less two different coalitions that are to the left of Ed Miliband. It has a coalition of George Galloway's Respect Party, and a lot of the discussions then are about Darfur, Palestine, not actual student issues, okay? The NUS as a political brand is not the best thing that we could choose to represent us, and very often going ourselves and actually using our links in Parliament, using our links in Fife, and using our links in society, we can push ourselves very far. So for those three reasons, namely, whether it would give us any advantages in our current campaigning, whether it is value for money, or whether it would be effective, I think that, no, we wouldn't benefit that immensely much from what you have stated.
And so there you mentioned about the political spectrum that the NUS comes on to, and that was one of the points I wanted to raise with Holly Patrick, who's not turned up. But would you suggest, if you say that it's campaigning for issues left of the Labour Party, much as I was going to ask her if she would reject members who would consider themselves to be right-wing, whether she would tell them that they shouldn't vote for the NUS, I'll ask you, do you think that people who consider themselves left of the Labour Party should vote for NUS?
No, not at all. This is not a political issue, and it's incredibly important to stress this. I mean, unfortunately, I have been receiving some... The No team in general has been receiving some insults on Facebook, calling us right-wing and probably some language that is ungentlemanly and shouldn't be put on air. The problem is, it would be an immense problem to frame this in a political manner, because people in the No campaign are from all parts of the political spectrum, right? The issue here isn't going to one political end or the other. The issue isn't to standing together with your political opinions. The issue is to extend along the political spectrum and acknowledge that our union in itself is extremely good. £20,000 taken away from it probably wouldn't make it better. It would almost definitely make it worse. And that the NUS isn't a representative or effective institution.
And so you seem to have contradicted yourself there. On one hand, you're saying that it represents those views. A minute ago, you answered to me and said that the left-wing views, the conference is tied up in all these things that maybe don't represent students' interests as you would see it, but they are representing a particular view on the political spectrum. Yet you've then told us this isn't a political issue. Is there not a contradiction then?
No, not necessarily. There isn't an issue at all, right? What I'm saying is that the National Conference of the NUS is in itself incredibly politicized already, right? At the same time, I don't think that joining, whether or not we should join the NUS, is a party political issue, okay? So I would say that the fact that the NUS is politicized to a large degree is very, very much an issue of student politics. And it is very much an issue and a problem in the NUS's internal politics and government. But I've met lots of people from the No campaign. I've had the pleasure to work with amazing activists this week. And I wouldn't call them anything. I wouldn't ever call them politically homogenous. They have come from the most diverse of views, they have the most diverse of opinions, and it's been very valuable input, but I would definitely not say that the referendum here is a political... I would definitely not say that it's a political activity under any circumstances whatsoever, because it isn't.
Okay, I'm going to give you just a moment now to sum up your views. I was going to give both sides a minute to say a selling point for them. And before we move on, without Holly here, I'm going to give you that chance to spend exactly 1 minute. I will cut you off if you go on more than that, saying what you think your selling point is, why people should vote no to the NUS.
Okay, so the first big selling point is essentially value for money, right? We believe that the NUS... We don't believe. We know for a fact that the NUS will take away £20,000 of the union's budget. This is an objectively bad thing. We've been running the union, and especially the societies, on a shoestring. Taking away £20,000 annually from wonderful societies such as Star Radio, such as the Debate Society, such as every society we've been in, really, really will not help, okay? The second one, has the NUS really been effective? And I would give a big no. The NUS has been very, very good at attaching itself to other lawsuits, taking the credit for it. The NUS has been very, very good at factional infighting and politics. But the NUS hasn't been particularly good at representing students. And I would say that it has many, many failures. And this, once again, it ties in with the value argument. It ties in with, we don't want to be associated with an organization that has that many failures. Finally, and I can see on the clock, I have 10 seconds left, independence, right? Independence, we feel, would be threatened, as we've seen in the past decade. Four different incidents, each one of which a rogue officer has threatened the independence of a student society institution. That's 60 seconds exactly. Why you should vote no.
Lucas, thank you for joining us. And I'll bring in now producer Carla, who's here in the studio and has been here with us now. Carla, you've maybe got more of a sense of how people around the town are feeling on this issue. Do you think that people are actually impassioned by this? Do they have strong views either way?
I still don't think that until now people have enough information on exactly what the NUS is, which is why discussion and campaigning is important from both sides. It's a real shame that Holly wasn't able to join us, because naturally in all debates you need both sides. I know that there are reasons why for yes and why for no, and what I'm hearing from people is a resounding no. I think this is because they merely hear that there will be money spent, and their focus is on finance and nothing else. Whether that's the big key thing here, and I know that Lucas, you pointed out many other reasons why you believe that people should say no to the NUS, but that's as ever, money is on students' minds, so that's not what they're focusing on. So I'm not sure how it'll go, and I think maybe even as it has today and tomorrow, as the campaigning goes on and more people are speaking about it, that we may be interested to see the results of the referendum.
I'm interested that in many ways the key selling point of the No campaign has been the money that the union would have to spend. And from what I'm hearing, the people who are arguing for yes are very much taking the NUS discount card as their key point. No one's really going into the representation that this issue offers. Is that not a key point to students? Because in many ways that's a lot of what the NUS does, is it's about representing people.
Mm-hmm. I don't think people are particularly discussing or concerned with that. And that's... In some ways, I mean, it does depend on what your point of view is. In some ways, that's a shame. We do have a reputation as a bubble who are very disjointed from in many ways, and this being a particular issue, disjointed from the rest of the universities and in the rest of the country. Whether this is a good thing or a bad thing is yet to be said. I'm sure those who stand for yes for NUS would say that a voice is priceless, to name a cliche, to have a say in something. As Lucas points out, maybe it's not a big say, but it's a say nonetheless. We haven't been part of the NUS since 1977, I think. Yeah. So that's been a while, and obviously there's a reason why we haven't been since then. But whether this is a the kind of isolated nature of St Andrews or not, I suppose will be discovered by the time the referendum results are called.
Carla, thank you. And still to come in the show today, we have Students Association President Freddie Ford here. He'll be telling us about his role in the NUS and what will happen either way after the result. He's impartial, but we'll be here after the news to give us the rest of the information on that. And later in the programme, there'll be a chance to hear my interview with George Galloway, who was in town speaking to the Domestic Politics Society earlier in the week. I'll be playing that at about 5:45 tonight. But for now, it's 5:30, and it's time for the latest from Star News. Rocket strikes between Israel and the Gaza Strip reignite tensions.
Live from Star Studios, this is Star News.
Sorry, there are just some quick technical difficulties. We're going to get another microphone in, though.
With the 5:30 Star News, I'm Verity Rayside.
And I'm Teddy Woodhouse. British Petroleum is set to receive a record fine of $3 to $5 billion to settle criminal charges stemming from the Deepwater Horizon oil rig disaster in 2010. The sum, to be confirmed later by the Department of Justice, will be the biggest criminal penalty in U.S. history. BP has set aside over $38 billion to cover liabilities from the disaster, although the final cost remains highly uncertain.
A new study has found that jazz musicians and rappers use their brains in similar ways when improvising, building on a 2008 study that looks at jazz pianists' brains. The new research reports that when improvising, the brains of both types of musicians paid less conscious attention to what was going on, but had strong activity in the area that motivates actions and thoughts. The team also found a network of connections in the rappers' brains, linking parts of the brain responsible for motivation, language, action and emotion. The study is part of a larger research project that is hoping to determine what is happening in the brain during the creative process.
Tensions in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict rose to a four-year high today as Israel carried out a retaliatory rocket attack over the Gaza Strip. Current accounts report 3 deaths in Israel and at least another 11 deaths within Gaza, including the death of 11-month-year-old son of a BBC Arabic service reporter. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu defended the rocket attacks, saying there was no moral symmetry between Gaza and Israel, and accusing Palestinian militants of war crimes. Earlier this week, Hamas confirmed the death of Ahmad Jabari, the organization's military leader. International observers have noted the potential difficulties in defusing the escalations in violence as the Israeli military reports that a rocket struck southern Tel Aviv suburb today.
And lastly, a reminder to vote on the current referendum on affiliation with the National Union of Students. Students have until 6 p.m. tomorrow to cast their vote, with results to be announced in Venue 1 around 9 p.m.
And those are today's headlines. For more news, tune into our bulletin tomorrow at 5:30 or online anytime on the news section of the Star website.
Tune into Star, the University of St. Andrews radio station.
St. Pancras' only radio station.
This is Star.
Contact us here at the studio by buzzing the studio from www.standrewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Alexander Jones Live. So far on the programme today, we've been discussing the NUS as the referendum continues. It started at 6 p.m. yesterday and it goes through till 6 p.m. tomorrow on whether St Andrews will join the NUS. We've been unaffiliated since 1977 and the question has been asked, I think this is the third or fourth time since then. Joining me now is Association President Freddie Ford, who is adjudicating over the proceedings. And I don't know, are the headphones not working, Freddie?
I think I'll go over it, thanks.
Okay. Freddie's the association president and he is adjudicating over the procedures and is strictly impartial, but is taking an overview over the whole thing. And Freddie, first of all, could you maybe tell us when the result will be announced tomorrow?
Voting closes at 6 p.m, which I think everybody, or I hope everybody, is aware of by now. And one of the important parts of referendum, and indeed all elections that happen here at the Union, is that they must be verified, both by a member of board and an external member, in this case a member of the university. And so it's our duty to inform them that we believe as an elections committee that the election has been carried out freely and fairly. And once we receive confirmation back from those two representatives, we will be making the announcement at around 9 o'clock through Star.
But you will know it at 6 o'clock when polls close. It's electronic.
We'll know the outcome of the votes that have been cast. Yes, but as I said, we do need to double check and verify that that any outstanding complaints have been answered, and that we have a representative and usable result.
The quorum for the vote to be valid is 20%. Are you confident that we're going to reach that number?
I'm very confident, yeah. And I think there's a few reasons for that. It's often quoted that we have the highest turnout we had the highest turnout in elections, something I'm enormously proud of other St Andrews students for. And I think the Elections Committee have done a good job, as have the media, in promoting this. And I'm really proud of the students for having understood the importance of the issue. I'm very confident indeed of reaching quorum.
Are you confident that this will provide a definitive answer one way or the other from the referendum? There's been some people suggesting to me that it probably won't be as long as 11 years before we have our next referendum either way, that it's going to be more like 2 or 3 years. Do you buy into that argument?
The motion that was passed by the SLC in April, stated that whether we get in or not, that there will be a repeat question, I believe it's every 3 years subsequent to this. So whether it's a yes or a no, we are due to have another question again in 3 years' time.
Would that not be massive disruption for the union? If people, in theory, could be pulling in and out every 3 years, would that not cause huge problems for people in jobs like yourself and your successors?
I think there's always a potential of overdoing something, for sure. But again, that again is for the SRC and SSC to decide. I think, you know, what we need to be enormously proud of and what we have to have at the centre of this is the fact that it is the students who are voicing their opinions on this, and the fact that we are, I'm confident, going to have a high turnout. That's where I want to focus the attention. And I don't doubt for a moment that that students of the future will be mindful of whatever the situation is at the time, and make sure that the decision to take another referendum either way won't be harmful. And I'm also confident that we set a good precedent for the conduct of elections this time around. So I hope that they'll be hassle-free in the future as well.
You mentioned student democracy here, and last year's election showed that the democracy is really strong here, if not the highest ever at a university, certainly is right up there. Are you confident that people are retaining interest in student politics, or are you worried that they could actually slip away and by the time it comes to the elections next year that actually they might have got deja vu about the whole thing?
I think there's democracy is a broad church, Alex. and I think I wouldn't expect, for example, although I would hope, I wouldn't necessarily expect the turnout for the referendum to be as high as, say, the general elections. And the reason for that is that the general election features I don't know, several hundred candidates probably once you add up all the positions, you can't move for general election publicity. So I think, we're very proud that we hit such a high number last year. I also think that to an extent, turnout can be a reflection of how people are feeling that they need to change what's going on, or whether they're happy with how the services are being delivered. Absolutely. Our target will be to make sure that elections continue to have high turnouts, and that people understand the importance of student government.
Okay, so we'll go back to the referendum and the possible outcomes. What happens on Monday if the vote goes yes? What changes in your job then?
I've always been very clear about the approach to my job from the start, and that is as I coined the. Well, actually, my friend coined the slightly asinine phrase collective leadership. And what that means is that my responsibility is to represent the views and wills of the students as best that I possibly can, not my own personal interests. It's one of the main reasons that I haven't taken a side in this referendum. And it is absolutely the reason that should we vote no on Monday, then you won't see me at the demonstration that the NUS are helping to organise the following week. If we vote yes to join the NUS, you will see me at that demonstration, simply because I feel that if the students mandate me to spend my time working with the NUS, I will be at every conference and every meeting that I can possibly attend. If they don't mandate me to do that, I won't be doing it.
But I guess if you're going to start attending NUS events like that in the hypothetical situation that this goes through, then that's going to take a lot of your time that you're currently doing other things with.
It will do, and I think that will be that will reflect for students on their on the wisdom of their decision. And I fully trust the voting students to take that into account when they make their decision. But as I said, I'm not doing this job for my own personal gain. I'm doing this job because there are students who believe in me to represent them. And if those same students then come out and say, you know what, we think you should be representing us at a national level, that's where I'll spend my time.
Okay. If we look at the flip side of this, what happens on Monday if the answer's no? Does anything change?
Does anything change? Not in this immediate sense, no. I think we carry on doing our job. I think we accept that the result has passed, and we continue getting back to our work, I suppose. I can't see how it would influence my day-to-day activity. I think what might be of interest is if, let's say it was a no, if there was a high number of students who had voted yes, I may seek to engage with those students and try and find out what their concerns are and seeing if I can be helping them within a non-NUS way on national issues. I think I speak on behalf of the whole sabbatical team when I say that we work enormously hard. We do the very best we can, but we can always do better. And as you know, I've been very keen to promote communication of what we do and when we do it. I'm just picking up again on my blog, having had a busy couple of weeks. And if students feel that they need to be communicating these needs for national representation to me more directly, then I'll be looking to meet up with those groups.
I know over the past year that there have been efforts to try and build links with the NUS and with other universities, and that was very much due to the particular views held by the last sabbatical team, who were campaigning very strongly. What do you think would be changing with those links if the answer was no? Do you think that actually St Andrews would pull back? Would the other universities want to distance themselves from us again?
I've just met the president of Durham University, who's here for the debate this evening. Very interesting guy. And we've just exchanged a lot of interesting opinions and best practices that we conduct at different universities. Now, he happens to be Durham happened to be in the NUS, and he's speaking in favour tonight. As I said, we're always willing to learn, and I think there's an enormous amount of good practice that can be shared. And I did a fair amount of communicating with other Scottish, I know he's not Scottish, but with Scottish union presidents over the summer. And I think it's important to keep those links up. It's difficult to get away from the fact that physically we are quite far away from others. So, but there's nothing wrong with me picking up the phone. And yeah, I'll continue to do that.
Freddie, thanks. Finally, could you just tell us how people can vote?
Yeah, you can vote in a number of ways. It's all done online, but to access the link, you can either refer to the email that I sent to all students yesterday at around 6 p.m. You can check the Students Association Facebook page. It's linked there. And I believe that both of the groups or events for yes and no have also linked to that page. So, yeah, please make sure you get out there and vote, and look forward to seeing the result tomorrow.
Freddie, thank you. And I'll bring back in producer Carla at this point. And Carla, what difference do you think it would make to students' lives on Monday if we were members of the NUS?
I think this is one of the main yes to NUS points. I think it would give us a voice. It would make us part of of the bigger community. And I suppose that is of course the point. I don't know how much, like, if we were to say yes to NUS, I don't know how much the discount would make quite a big difference. But I suppose we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
But do you think actually practically students are going to notice the difference on Monday when they go about their lives?
If I'm to be honest, I don't particularly think so.
Is that maybe part of the problem? I know, experiencing the town myself, I can see in certain parts that there's a lot of strong opinion, in particular in places like halls of residence. People are really talking about this issue. But I get the feeling when you talk to the older students, the people on the fringes in houses, that actually they just aren't really caring either way, that they don't really feel like it'll affect them. And maybe that's true.
Well, I suppose that's part of student life. When you are living in halls of residence perhaps even, you know, university accommodation in general, you do get a more sense of what's going on. It is a university issue. It's not a St Andrews Town issue. So the thing is, that what's interesting is that, you know, we're getting more and more information about the NUS, which is important because our vote, you know, votes need to be informed and everyone should vote, whatever their opinion, of course, and inform themselves on the different sides. But just lost my point there. Inform yourselves on the different sides.
But yeah, it's important for students that they consider the arguments, but actually for many of them, they don't feel like the
right.
things are actually going
Sorry.
To be threatening
yes.
them day
Apologize.
To day.
Apologise. Thought floated back into mind there. The fact that it's not going to make a difference, and it's something that we have an experience. Obviously, students are here for 4 years, perhaps more if you're doing a postgrad. But we haven't experienced an NUS in years in St Andrews. No one has experienced an NUS in years for St Andrews. So even if you know PhD students, they're not going to have any experience of it. So who's to say whether it will make any difference? And maybe it will just be, you know, an offside thing that, you know, perhaps, you know, our president attends every once in a while and we get some representation in. But I can't see any big difference being made, certainly not immediately.
Carla, thank you. And of course, the NUS referendum, as we've said a number of times on the programme today, is currently ongoing and polls close at 6 o'clock tomorrow and an announcement is expected tomorrow evening. Earlier this week, Respect MP George Galloway was in St Andrews giving a talk to the Domestic Politics Society. Before the event, I spoke to him and began by asking what the highs and lows of his career have been.
Well, the highest undoubtedly was the by-election victory on the 29th of March of this year when I did a double Lazarus, came back from the dead twice, and that was the second of them and certainly the greatest of them. It was a landslide majority. Nobody saw it coming. You would have got 200-1 on the day I arrived in Bradford. And the bookies stopped taking bets 2 days before the polls, so they could see what was coming, but none of the media seemed to, which was probably good for me. That was undoubtedly my highest political point, though I have had a number of them, defeating Roy Jenkins in 1987, one of the greats of post-war British politics, was obviously quite a high point, leading the anti-war movement on the biggest ever marches in British history. These were all high points. Low points, of course, are not hard to find. The expulsion from the Labour Party after 36 years was quite a considerable blow to me, although I did tell Mr Blair he would rue the day, and he had to rue it twice.
Yeah, so you've now left the Labour Party after they threw you out over Iraq, formed Respect. Yeah. What do you think the prospects are for Respect as a political party now?
Well, we've got important by-elections coming up. We are, I think, by common consent, competing in two of those as potential winners in Croydon and in Rotherham. So by the end of this month, we'll have a slightly better idea of that. But objectively, as I shall be discussing tonight, the conditions exist for a left-of-centre party because there is none. And Labour has effectively, abandoned its historic role, and that leaves a gap. Every country has a Labour party, and Britain doesn't have one. And we would prefer if Labour became Labour again, but there's not a great deal of chance of that, I don't think so. In a way, one has to try and found a new one. So I feel that Respect has a future. Its ideas chime with the ideas of millions in the country, the idea of peace rather than war, justice and equality are important touchstones in human development, since the French Revolution, there have always been forces representing these strands in European politics, and I think we represent those strands.
You're obviously the protest vote at the moment. You're succeeding in by-elections. That was your own experience, and you're suggesting that's something that could happen again. But do you think you can make the transition to being a party that can win in general elections?
It's very difficult to do that, given the British political system. The clash of the titans, Ed Miliband, perhaps it would be better if it was David Miliband, but Ed Miliband and David Cameron, if they can be described as titans, will tend to push out of the limelight other competing forces. But I just put this to you. When I was your age, 95% of the people of Britain voted Labour or Conservative, and now fewer than 50% of the people do. And that's a remarkable transformation. So politics is changing. The economic situation is parlous. I believe it will get more parlous still. And as in Greece and other places, that will throw up possibilities that aren't immediately visible right now.
Throughout your career, you've not been far from controversy, and in August you made some comments that received a lot of criticism across the media about rape. Do you regret making those comments now?
No. I was making a comment about a particular rape allegation, belatedly made, against Julian Assange. And I believe that Julian Assange is the victim of an orchestrated setup, and I believe that everyone will believe that quite soon when things that are currently in the pipeline come out into full public view. Controversy generates a lot of heat, but some light, and in that light, people tend to see things illuminated that they might not otherwise see.
Another issue that you raised a lot of controversy in the public eye was your time on Big Brother. We're now seeing another sitting MP taking part in a reality TV show. What do you think of Nadine Dorris's decision to take part in I'm a Celebrity?
Well, what I think about it is that I haven't thought about it. The Big Brother was during the Christmas New Year holidays, and I didn't get paid by the Parliament during that period voluntarily. So I'm not sure the two are strictly comparable, but what I tried to do and wasn't visible to all, but I believe over the years, how many years is it now? 6 years since then. It has proven to be the case to try and reach a younger audience that wouldn't otherwise be engaged or interested in politics. And I think that I harvested some of that in the Bradford by-election. Very, very large number of teenagers and people in their early 20s had their first encounter with me on Big Brother. So if you're asking, would I do it again? No. Do I regret doing it? No.
And just to clarify, would you have done it when Parliament was sitting?
No. I don't have, no. I mean, I did actually stay in longer than I expected, so I did miss, I think, 4 days of Parliament, but many MPs miss far more than that. The difference is they're on a beach. I was raising a very large sum of money for Palestinian children in Gaza, almost £50,000 for Interpol, with the proceeds, my share of the proceeds of the phone-in money, you know. The charity gets 10 pence off every call or something like that, and each contestant nominates the charity to which the money should go. And I also employed an additional caseworker from the fee that I was paid. So overall, I think the public benefited.
Finally, George, you're giving a talk tonight about the future of socialism in this country. Do you think that you're better served to push that future from a minority party than you would be from the Labour Party?
No, I would be better able to push it from the Labour Party. If the Labour Party was fertile ground for the pushing of socialist ideas, it would be better to be in it, but it isn't, and that's one of the reasons I'm out of it, the fact that I'm out of it is one of the symptoms of that. No, it would definitely be better if Britain's Labour Party became a Labour Party again, but in the absence of that, what can you do? If you still believe in those ideas, you have to find, if necessary, construct vehicles for that.
But you leave the door open to working with the Labour Party again in the future?
Sure, I want Labour to win the election. I don't want Scotland to break up with the rest of the island. It's a small island in a small world. I wish Labour well in contests that they're fighting others, but clearly when they're fighting us, it's a battle between what we call real Labour and new Labour. And I think you'll find in Croydon and in Rotherham a very large number of people prefer the real deal.
George Galloway, thank you very much for speaking to Star.
Thank you so much.
Want to find out more about Star? Then check out standrewsradio.com. standrewsradio.com.
And that's it for Alexander Jones Live today. We've been discussing the NUS. We've been discussing with Freddie Ford what his role is in the whole thing. And that was my interview with George Galloway from earlier in the week. And of course, the whole programme will be available as a podcast on the Star News website in just a while. And you can get the latest news from Star daily at 5:30 and at standrewsradio.com. Now today is the 21st birthday of producer Carla, who is here. And Carla, happy birthday.
Thank you
for coming in on your birthday.
Thank you.
And it's good to have you here. So, in special honour of the day, we have something to play.
Happy birthday.
And that's it from us for today. Thank you for listening. I'll be here again next week at the same time. Good night.